folks. It is time for another edition of the Women's Roundtable. Let's give you the participants for today's session. We start out with Rosalie Drago, the Long Island Regional Director of the Workforce Development Institute, WDI, 20 years plus of New York-based economic development experience, working closely with Long Island employers, employees, lawmakers, and educators to promote commercial and residential interests. We welcome Rosalie, also Maria Fry, president and founder, executive consultants of New York Core, and CEO of the ECNY Foundation. Her area of concentration is in providing comprehensive career and business strategy development services to businesses, government, and educators. Welcome, Maria. Also, Evelyn Ortiz, first time here at the roundtable. Deputy Director of the New York Association of Training and Employment Professionals, known as also the NYATEP. It's a nationally recognized leader in workforce development, known as New York's Workforce Association. And, oh, yes, let's not forget about Krupa Larasella, co-creator of the Women's Roundtable, of course, CEO of FTC Strategies, Inc., Long Island Community Advocate, Folio Media Awards Judge, LI Business News Top 50 Women in Business, Board Member, LI Coalition for the Homeless, recipient of multiple community and business leadership and awards from county and state officials. And let's not forget, with Krupa, a candidate. Very important, folks, because when you vote, which is a week from tomorrow, you got to remember the name, Krupa Larasella. And she is a candidate for the Sachem Board of Education. How about that, Krupa? I didn't forget.
Thank you, Jake.
It is great to have all of you here. Welcome, ladies, and I hope everyone here and others had a very happy Mother's Day.
Thank you.
We did. Thank you. And I hope our listeners did as well.
Oh, great day indeed, even in the rain. Ladies, let's start it out. Let's tell the audience. Main topic of discussion, the offering of vocational and technical career pathways, as well as career development programs over the high school level. And we're going to kind of really kind of focus on this, a very important topic. We talk about keeping young people here. And, you know, listen, I say it all the time, ladies, you know, the affordable housing is great unless we have the jobs here in a vocational sense to keep our young folks here. It's just not going to work. Rosalie, I want to start out with you because, you know, you have been a force as well. You know, the Long Island Regional Director of the Workforce Development Institute, a.k.a. WDI, 20 years plus as far as New York-based economic development experience. And you work closely with Long Island employers, employees, lawmakers, and educators, really promoting commercial and residential interests. I mean, how vital is it, Rosalie Drago, as we start out with you, regarding just keeping young folks in check, making sure those job opportunities are present after they graduate here? We don't see a lot of it. How dire is it right now?
Thank you, Jay. You know what? We have thousands of jobs open right now on Long Island. Last year, Long Island posted about 127,000 jobs, and the employers are struggling to fill them. And we know for a fact that we have talent in our schools, our colleges, and our high schools. So a career pathway is essential to that. In order for anyone to know what career to go into and to become a thriving member of Long Island society, they have to have access to those jobs, they have to know about those jobs, and they have to be prepared about them. So that starts in high school, right? When you connect what you're interested in and what you're doing well at in school with opportunity on Long Island, and vocational training, as well as just connecting your general classroom topics to what's available out there, right? STEM is a focus on Long Island, everywhere else, really. We have a very thriving pharmaceutical manufacturing sector. We have healthcare. We have technology. And we need the students to know that those jobs are there and start connecting with them.
Rosalie, I'm going to throw one at you here. You mentioned there are thousands. How do we make young people more aware of these types of positions? You know, it seems the counseling and everything else, advising and you know, for the next level and everything else. But then when kids come home, sometimes they're kind of in a whirlwind of activity, of questioning what type of avenue to go on here. How do we make it more aware for those folks?
I think it's a multi-pronged approach, right? So one thing is we've been working at WDI on connecting. There's a bunch of stakeholders that are supporting students in their career, right, and their education. Those are teachers. Those are guidance counselors. Those are parents. And those are their community members, right? So you're talking about surrounding them, right, very wisely, Jay, making sure that wherever they're at, whether it's at home or at school, they're getting that support and that connection. So we've been going school by school. There's about 127. Marie and I aren't sure by which day how many school districts there are, but about 127 school districts. So one by one, a lot of us are going in there. Recently, we took Wyandanch High School teachers and students on a tour of Novartis, which is a major global pharmaceutical company, right? So we took them on a tour. They started out their day with an overview of the occupations. They took a tour of those occupations focusing on STEM, how is science used, how is math used, how is technology used. Then they came back and had a panel discussion with the department heads. And then, and so what was really important about that panel discussion, besides the fact that the students got to see how science and math and a lot of their creative studies linked to jobs, is that each one of those panel members had a different career pathway. So one gentleman left high school, went to community college, started the job, loved it, and then the employer paid for him to go back and get his four-year degree. Another person on the panel went straight to four-year college. Another person came out of high school, didn't do any sort of additional education, went in, started working, and then went back and took some specific coursework to advance. And all of those people that were on the panel discussion were senior executives making over $100,000 a year, right? So number one is to bring students into those facilities. Number two, another thing we've done with high schools is every high school's got a 3D printer. The teachers are already inundated with a tremendous amount of work and focus and things they have to do to complete the coursework for the year, but they aren't trained on how industry uses the technology that's in their school. So we connect them with local employers that can not only provide tours for the students, but can say the employer happened to be Spectronics in Westbury, said, hey, we would be happy to teach your teachers how we use this 3D printer in industry, and then do a project with the students so that they can see what it's like. So it's really about integrating business with the high school, making those connections in each district to those businesses. So manufacturing, we have 2,700 manufacturers on Long Island. Every district has, 20, 30, 40 manufacturers that want to hire students. So number one thing is business owners can get connected to their high school.
That's important stuff. Let's hear from Maria Fry, president and founder of the Executive Consultants of New York Corps, CEO of the ECNY Foundation. Her area of concentration, ladies and gentlemen, is really providing comprehensive career and business strategy development services to businesses, government, as well as educators. Maria, it seems like, according to Rosalie, that there are some pretty good things in place, at least to alert the activities going on once kids graduate. What do you think? More improvement needed? We have enough out there? What's your take?
There's a lot out there. It's just a matter of connecting industry to the educational institutions and allowing the students to experience different things. I think that once you take a child or a student out of the school and you put them in the dynamic of what they're going to be doing every single day, it really does help them in making a decision as to, you know what, I actually want to do this and I want to go to school for this. And it makes them excited. It also assists them in cultivating relationships so that they have an internship, mentorship, an apprenticeship, something waiting for them. And that's truly important.
That's no question. And it's great to have Evelyn Ortiz in place. She is the Deputy Director of New York Association of Training and Employment Professionals, also known as the NYATEP. It's a nationally recognized leader as well in workforce development, known as New York's Workforce Association. Really, Evelyn's focus on unemployment pathways and that for the more vulnerable populations. Evelyn, I tell you, it seems like we have some great pathways present, but it's really just kind of reminding and alerting those who have a better path they would like to kind of embark on. How do we kind of make it more prevalent for those?
So in terms of helping the most vulnerable populations, one, we must understand and just gain more awareness of those
populations that are really struggling right now, specifically in Long Island. And when we look at, like, you know, specifically certain school districts that are faring worse than others, and understanding the dynamics for those individuals, you know, we realize that, hey, we need to spend more time supporting specifically, like, Latinos, African-American youth. One thing, you know, like, I'm just going to feed off of what my colleagues just shared right now in terms of the need for career and technical education in schools. You know, BOCES programs, for instance, you know, they do great work within these communities, like in areas like Wyandanche, Brentwood. 95% of high school seniors that actually enroll in BOCES programs actually graduate, whereas in some of these schools, the graduation rates are really low. But yet, if they integrate themselves into these programs, they are so much more successful. So we find that, you know, the exposure to these programs, access to this program, can really help this population.
That's a huge deal indeed. Krupa, I'll tell you, you're running for a board position at SACHM coming up a week from Tuesday. And, of course, you know, everything will be present, budgets and everything else on the 21st. Give me your take as a potential board member. How would you improve the system, if any? How would we kind of let kids know when they go to the next level and thereabouts, once finishing, how can they come back to our area and kind of grow the economy, stay here? That's the biggest problem I see here is kids wanting to leave the area. They took polls in the last couple of weeks. Kids are not happy here as far as the job situation and whatnot. How do we make it more present to them as far as what could await them?
Well, that's a great question. And it's something that I work hard on every single day for not only just SACHM School District, but other districts across Long Island. You know, having partnerships for Long Island between employers and our public education sector, it's a winning partnership. It's undeniable. You know, when we have apprenticeships, it translates directly into employment. And when we have a worker shortage, when we have a skill shortage on Long Island, and we're struggling to answer those questions, those answers are right here with the talent of the kids that we have on Long Island. Long Island spends, probably compared to other states, the most amount of money per student in education. And we have to reinvest in vocational training. And when I say vocational, I don't want us to keep drinking that Kool-Aid of it just means construction. No, construction actually is imperative to a region because it keeps us current. It keeps us as a destination for business and for industry and for tourism. And along with that, we should also have technology. We should have healthcare, like Rosalie had mentioned. We should have manufacturing and other technical pathways for vocational training in our schools. When we do that, we're not only just investing in growing our skill gap, growing our worker shortage, but we're also putting a foundation for premier industries to stay on Long Island and not pack up and leave and move to other states. So, you know, as an advocate for public education, as, you know, I chair the SACHM Legislative Committee, and, you know, I work on bringing some of these unfunded mandates, mitigating the costs of them, to help bring these things on. Maria and I are both working with SACHM Schools, with Dr. Graham, and with Heron Himes to help bring these programs into SACHM Schools. We both serve on the Smithtown Industry Advisory Board. We co-chair the International Business Department at Smithtown Central Schools. And with that, what we do is we mentor. We bring in partners from the private sector regarding employers and businesses, and we help to translate and take the complexity out of talent acquisition out, because we're here, they're here, and it shouldn't be so complicated to connect the two dots.
It shouldn't be, but, you know, it is. You know, listen, and looking back just from my personal experience with three kids in the system on the North Fork in Rocky Point, you know, in essence, they didn't give you a lot of training. You know, they didn't have a lot of questions for the kids as far as, you know, what the future might hold for them. You know, I went through the process of kids kind of finishing and getting advisement as far as the institutions to go on after the school, after high school. But in essence, there was not a lot of vocational training. training, at least in the ranks what I saw where I lived. Is that, Rosalie, is that something that could be more of a focus in the years to come? We mentioned some of the districts already kind of overseeing this stuff. I don't think everybody's involved, though.
Jay, so I'm a parent. I have two young children in the system. So I just want to, you know, be clear for the listeners that this is not a judgment that I'm not familiar with for myself. But we have two distinct issues. So our affluent upper middle class school districts have been guided by the parents to steer away from vocational training. So the parents are saying, oh, these jobs are beneath my kids. I don't want them in vocational training. And the challenge is that's an incredible disservice to their children. I am meeting with the CEOs of companies across Long Island. These are global brands, Estee Lauder, Novartis, tremendous Department of Defense companies, right? Northwell. And they are saying nice degrees these kids have, but they have no work experience. They don't know how to work together. They don't know how to do a job. And that, in meaning well for our kids and wanting them to do well, I have talked to kids who have said, my parents said I shouldn't work. And then the employers are saying, I can't hire these kids when they come back because they've never worked before. So in one hand, in our affluent and upper middle class districts, the administration has been guided by, Krupp is running for a board, right? The local parents are saying, don't introduce vocational schools or vocational training to my kids. They have to go to college. And I would say that you may need to go to college for the job, and you should if that's your pathway. But how do you know what college you're choosing, right? How do you know you're choosing the right program for a job that's going to be lucrative for you and give you professional and personal, allow you to flourish? You have to have exposure and you have to have work experience. On the other hand, our most disadvantaged schools, the students are already working, but they're not working in a job that's connected to a career path. And so I've been working since I'm 14. I've delivered pizza. I've waited tables. I've worked in a supermarket. If someone would have said to me, hey, I know you need to work part-time. What are you interested in? And here are some part-time jobs you can do that will help you stack up experience that will give you access to skills and a job. That would have been better for me. And I did go to college, right? But if I had been using my part-time work in a more intentional way. So we have dueling issues. In our more affluent communities, we need the parents to understand that work is something that helps their children flourish. And in the more disadvantaged communities, we need to help parents guide the students, teachers and guidance counselors help the students curate their work experience to put them on a path to success.
I think that's important that what you said there, Rosalie. And I think one of the misconceptions, and I hope we do get to educate this and clear the pathway a little bit, is that apprenticeships does not mean that you're taking college off the table. And I think that a lot of times that's where people get confused or they draw the line. They think it's one or the other, A or B. And we're not saying that at all. We're saying sometimes take that apprenticeship, see what it exposes you to. What are the opportunities? Something as simple as supply chain, right? When you go into supply chain, you can go in as an apprenticeship, and maybe a couple of years down the line, once you are employed, your employer might have a tuition reimbursement program.
And most of them do. Statistics on right. BOCES and CTE, right. which is right. Career Technical Education classes, the statistics are that those students not only go back to school, but they out-earn at a right. younger age their peers.
Absolutely. And so I think that is, it's very important that we have to not only just educate the businesses and public education, but we also have to educate the parents because they're stakeholders in this conversation. And it's absolutely true on that.
Yeah. So one of the things that I noticed also is how many students end up going to school and getting a degree and then going into the industry and then they hate it. And it's because they did not have that clinical opportunity to have that experience or gain that experience. And I'm one of them. My first degree, I call it my fluke degree. And I always say to everyone, I'm like, I don't even put it on my LinkedIn profile. I don't have it on a resume. I don't talk about it because I went to school for 3 years. And I ended up saying, I can't believe I have to do this. I was like, I am not happy.
Right.
I don't want to do this. So I ended up working for a while and then going back to school again. And so the thing is, by giving them this opportunity to gain that firsthand experience, you're setting them up for success. Because either they're going to buy into it and say, I love it, I'm going to do this. Or they're going to say, I can't see myself doing this for the rest of my life. And we are taking that into control a lot faster than it would be 10 years down the road when they have bills, when they have, you know, potentially a family or a home. You can't do that. We need to get them in there ASAP for the experience.
Yeah, apprenticeship definitely gives you the opportunity and affords you the growth to pivot and to see how you want to move and exposes you to it.
Ladies, one of the things I see, and I've seen from experiences, that kids sometimes don't know what to focus on, you know, as far as when they're in school, whether it be 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th grade. Even those who graduate, go to school just for the sake of going to the next level, still don't know what they want to kind of focus on until they get maybe to the third or fourth level in college. Then an epiphany happens, and then, you know, somehow they can kind of zero in on something. I think part of the problem is that kids are sometimes, you know, either uninformed of the proper paths to take. Maybe there's not enough focus as far as the skill set to be developed. But a lot of kids, you know, who enter college and halfway through still don't understand, you know, as far as the path they might want to take. I think that's one of the biggest problems also.
Yes. So one of the things that I also noticed was, okay, so let's take it back. I don't know when CSI and those movies and those shows came out. So everybody wanted to get into forensic science. And all I kept thinking was, oh, my God, there aren't enough jobs. I mean, every county, if we're lucky, has one, what are they called, the county coroner or whatever it is. And it's not sexy and it's not gorgeous. And it's you're not going to chase down some guy in a 4-inch stiletto and say, gotcha. Right. And, you know, and then look fabulous, you know, fabulous doing it. So one of the things I always say is before you end up going the entire route, you need to check it out. You need to get that, even if it's an internship for 6 weeks, whatever it is, a day in the life is so important for them to experience.
So it's interesting because when I was in high school, I went to a school that offered like these career and technical education programs. And I was very fortunate compared to a lot of my counterparts because there were about 6,000 students in my school. I went to school in New York City. And, you know, what I found was that regardless, even though I was exposed, I felt like, hey, this was, you know, I wanted to pursue a career in healthcare, went to school, I went to Stony Brook. And, you know, like I ended up going all the way until my senior year as a bio major. And then I changed course, right? But I was fortunate enough that I was exposed and I knew, I felt like I wanted to do something in service of people. But thankfully, like I chose another route in social work. But regardless of the fact, I was happy that it made me focus and it gave me an opportunity that a lot of my counterparts didn't have. And unfortunately, what they ended up doing was actually starting school and dropping out of school, right? So one thing that we realized, you know, like although I didn't take that same course, you know, it motivated me to go to school. I came from a community where, you know, college wasn't the number one thing, and you know, working was. So like I just like Rosalie had mentioned, you know, like I had part-time jobs since I was like 14 years old. But when we actually ended up getting to school, you know, a lot of people struggled, and it doesn't matter like if you came from an affluent community or more disadvantaged community, we see that the graduation rates within the SUNY system itself are fairly low. You know, usually people graduate within 6 years. I think the graduation rate is about 60% for the state's school system. You know, so if you think about that and
I didn't realize it was at like 62%.
Yes. It's incredible. And like, that's not, you know, like, especially like you have a lot of people that start in the junior college level, right? Mainly because they don't know what they want.
Right.
Or, you know, some of them, yes, the graduation rates are high, but that doesn't mean that everyone is graduating with a 90 like percentile, right? Like most people are graduating like with an average, like 65-75%. Doesn't mean that they're all getting into like the top schools,
right?
You know, so the graduation rates amongst the like community college level are actually lower than that.
And that's why it's important to promote the fact that there are multiple pathways to get to success. Like that's probably the most important message to get across to parents and students alike, which is that there's multiple ways to go and you have to try it and figure out which one works for you. And, you know, you mentioned access and awareness. So Maria is working on a tool that's called Career Map Long Island, which you can talk about, because this one of the things that the guidance counselors have said, the career work-based learning coordinators said was, we can't get out all the time to discover what's out there. What can you help us put into the school system to help kids start? So I always use So if you say you like a helicopter, even as young as my son is at 9.5, you can start to say things like, well, what is it? Do you want to fly one? Do you want to make one? Do you want to design one? Do you want to repair one? Jay, I can tell you, we have all those jobs on Long Island, and they're good paying jobs, right?
Right down the street.
So you can fly an airplane, but you could, or a helicopter, but you could fly it as a medic for Northwell, or you could fly it for the military, or you can fly it for tourism, or you can fly it for offshore wind, which is coming down the pike. So, this tool that Maria is putting into this, the developing and will be put into the school system, will be a way for you to go in and start to just explore, teachers and students, what's out there for you. So,
It's interesting that you say that because, I get invited to go speak at high schools to students usually that are in 10th grade, 11th grade about careers and the future. And one of the first questions I will ask the school district, and I've shared this with Maria all the time, is if you're going to tell me to come in there and promote going to college, I'm going to have to decline. I can say definitely go to college and definitely explore apprenticeships, because one of the reasons is there's many reasons why kids might not be college bound. They might not be college bound for financial reasons, health reasons, personal family reasons, and not just, academically wise. So there's a lot of valid reasons why. And when we tell them that if you're not going to college, then your likelihood for success is less, and I've just deflated them during my presentation in sixth period, and shame on me and shame on anyone that helps to perpetuate that myth. We have to go in there. It's our responsibility. It is our moral duty to go in there and show them, like Rosalie had just explained, all the fabulous, dynamic, profitable, fulfilling careers that we have on Long Island from just one product, This is what we all need to partner in and do. And this is what education is. This is what collaborative educational partnership is all about. When we talk about budgets and everything coming up, these are programs that do not bend the scales when it comes to curriculum for the school districts. So it's important that we go ahead and we keep pursuing this.
No, it's very important. And we're going to talk a little bit after the break, ladies, because, I see it as kind of a double-edged sword here. I see it as, maybe there's not enough personnel in the schools. And I kind of have seen that in my neck of the woods. Maybe there's not enough information being passed on to these kids, so that when they go to school and when they get out, they'll know about the jobs and everything else. Maybe the focus needs to be a little bit more in the schools. And the other aspect is student debt. It is through the roof, off the charts, as far as the trillions and everything else. Maybe that's a turnoff for some to even venture into a school. And as far as, maybe it's hit or miss, from a vocational standpoint. Let's get into that in a second, though. 8:36, we'll come back. You're listening to the Women's Roundtable. Let's get a quick update. As far as your travels are concerned, here on a Monday morning, once again, we turn to Cindy Wakeman. Let's get back into it. You are listening to the Women's Roundtable, another edition, a great topic, vocational technical career pathways, career development programs at the high school level. Are there enough for kids to kind of retain status where they're from here on the island? That is a big question right now. I kind of threw it out before the break. We're talking with four fantastic individuals, experts in their own field, Rosalie Drago, Maria Fry, Evelyn Ortiz, Krupa Lorzella, and of course, ladies, I threw this out before the break, and that is, we have the budgets and everything else coming into play a week from Tuesday, and I've said this all along, as far as personnel, are there enough out there as far as advisors within the school system itself, the guidance counselors, the academic advisors, to really kind of concentrate, focus on making kids a clear pathway for what they want to do in life, maybe something that could trigger something. And when they go to the next level, if it's for that particular individual, to have that pathway pretty much in the system for them to have some sort of a success career-wise, is there enough as far as the systems themselves, what they speak of personnel-wise. I'll throw that in at Evelyn first. Evelyn, what do you think? Budgets and everything else. I've said this all along. Are there enough people to kind of help guide the pathway for many?
I think Maria was just coming in and saying something on that.
I'm sorry. So, yes, I believe that there are enough, but I think that we have to just change the way that we're doing it. I don't think that we discuss the options enough. Like Krupa had said, college, college, college. Well, you know what? There are so many other things that we need to talk about. There are so many other avenues. And, you know, what we need to do is we need to take the stigmas away from things like BOCES, things like, you know, trade schools, all these different academic opportunities that these students really do have. So we do have the personnel. We do have the people in the schools. We have business teachers in schools. That should be part of their responsibility.
And allocate time in the program. Absolutely. To sit down with the CTE advisors. It shouldn't be for those students that want to speak to them, but it should be something that's open to all the students where within a year they do get to spend one period at least with their CTE advisors, which is career technical educating advisors.
And it should be an and conversation, not an or conversation, right?
Correct.
So the BOCES, the technical education, that is not about as much about your path as about your learning style. So if you're a contextual learner where you need to learn things hands-on, the general school system is not set up that way. More schools are moving to experiential models and learning. But traditionally, if that's what BOCES and some of those technical programs have been, is if you learn what you learn contextually, meaning hands-on, then that's for you. So, for example, Eastern Suffolk BOCES, their students who were not, many of whom were not performing in AP standards in Standard High School, when they get to BOCES, they're working on projects for our employers like Pressapart and CPI Aero, and they're working on projects with employers. And then when they go back and all of their classes are contextualized around actual work, now they're AP kids. They've got scholarships to college, right? They're choosing not even to take the job offers and to go back to college because we've contextualized it. So giving, we have staff, but we haven't given them permission to tell the kids it's okay to go whatever way and try out what way works for you. We said this earlier. We're saying one's better than the other, or one's beneath the other.
It's not a value placement, it's a pathway.
Student.
Right.
It's also about the student and how they learn best.
Right.
But it's interesting because at the same time, it does feel like you do need additional staff, right? Because the staff that are there already, it's going to take them a while to gain the understanding, even like the skill set to be able to support the young adults that are in school. So as you were talking, I'm like, wait a minute. So right now, everything is so curriculum based. Mm-hmm. It would take years, for the school system to really transform itself and see, and really focus on careers. But if you bring in new staff, right, who can actually focus on those areas, or let's say guidance staff that have that specific skill set, then that could help advance the system a little bit faster. I see it as specifically in the larger school districts, sometimes you have one counselor for an entire grade, right? Like hundreds of students. There's no way that you can sit down and really support individuals on a one-on-one basis who actually really need it, who are confused.
And you're right also because the Work-Based Learning Coordinator Association, right? There's 127 school districts. There's only 40 work-based learning coordinators, and half of them are part-time. Whether by choice or by budget, the schools aren't investing in that as a priority because they're really measuring graduation rates and looking at who's going to college. So we don't have even every school district on Long Island doesn't have a fully funded full-time work experience coordinator on staff. That person's job is to liaise with industry and find out what's new and go back and help the teachers know and to look for jobs. Most of our schools on Long Island don't even have a full-time person
I think that's where it's important where when you educate parents, when parents speak up and say, I want this for my students, I want my students to have access to these programs and these curriculums, then it becomes a priority for the school district. Then the school district is compelled to move at the will of what the parents and the students mm-hmm. in that district want. I can tell you firsthand of a program that I was mentioning before where Maria and I are, that we serve on. Even, Mary Pat Grafstein is a phenomenal resource on Long Island within New York State. She runs the IDA and the DECA programs at Smithtown Central Schools. And the way it works with her is she works with us as partners. So from a business owner in the private sector, myself or Maria, we work with them in partnership to help mentor students, to connect them with people that are in the different industries, you know? And one of the things that I was tasked with this year is finding new mentors, mentors that can relate with the emerging students that are coming about, that are going to be out in the workforce, and connect them with a whole different range of different industries. You know, I've even spoken to Jay, your awesome team here, Mike and Matt, about becoming mentors, because they do such a phenomenal job in communications and they're so great at what they do that they would be an asset to any student that's looking to go into communications. So these are the things that we have to show. People have to be aware of all the different industries we have on Long Island. And if we don't do homegrown talent with our incredibly talented kids, and if we spend thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of dollars more per student than any other region in this country, and then we don't have affordable, you know, competitive earning jobs for them over here, then we can't blame them for leaving, because mm-hmm. at some point it's our own reification. So, you know, we have to get not just the businesses, but public education, and we have to get partners in as stakeholders, mm-hmm. and we need to educate across the board.
And that's the word right there, partnerships.
Yes.
You know, it's amazing, and you and I have both experienced it with the Smithtown IAB.
Right.
The partnerships that they have, whenever they have a board meeting, you have 100 people there.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It is absolutely amazing. And that's not even our school district, and we volunteer for it.
Yeah.
So, you know, giving back to the community, it doesn't matter whose kids they are, what school district it is. You know, if they invite me in, I'm in, and that's it. But I think that, again, it's got to be everyone coming together. Parents, schools, partnerships from the businesses and industry, and really just bring that all together and show the students that they have more than one avenue that they can go down.
And that is what we're doing for
SACHEM. I could give you another example, too. We did it in Harborfield's district, Thomas J. Leahy. We did a STEM fair, and I, you know, I was on the committee, and I said, would it be all right if I brought businesses in? And they said, well, you can bring businesses in? And I said, yeah. So on a STEM night, instead of trying to figure out for yourself how you're going to talk about STEM and do activities, I can bring in four companies that will come in and show you how STEM goes. And so we had I'm sure you've seen in your own communities, you pass these buildings and you don't know what they are. Well, this was BAE Systems. It's a global communications Department of Defense company, right? So they came in and used Legos for third graders. And on STEM night, they did a demonstration, and the difference was we invited the parents. So wasn't a drop-off event. The parents were there, and they said, this is what we do. And they said, do you guys have to work in groups together on projects? Yes. Is it easy or hard? No, it's hard. It's terrible. Nobody wants to lose, right? But we have to do that for a job, and we build communication systems for tanks and airplanes, right? And then we had somebody who's a podcaster, Dan Pajman from The Sporkful, right? He came in, and he had all the kids make their own podcast. One was a producer, one was a guest, one was a host, right? And so in each room, and then we had someone from Brookhaven National Lab doing magnetics and science, and right? So you can bring it in young, right? And then the other thing is you have to engage the parents every single
Without
time.
Question.
Because if they don't know, they can't guide their kids.
Without question.
I will tell you that I have parents come to me all the time within our district and outside the district, but more so since I'm out in the community in SACHEM a lot. They tell me I'm very frustrated. My kids in college, they're about to graduate, you know, and they can't find a job, or they have graduated and they're looking and it's hard. They're back home, you know, back in their room. They're upset about it. You know, we're upset about it. It's not that they're not trying. It's just that they can't find that connection. And sometimes, many of the times, they do have to leave. So this is it's a win-win answer to connecting those dots.
I mean, a lot of times the parents also have to like loosen the reins a little bit, right? Like, and I say this as a parent, I'm also a step parent to a 17-year-old. And what I see is that sometimes, you know, we want to have them so close and we want to dictate, you know, like everything that they need to do and like how they need to do it. And what we realize is that it's actually a detriment at the same time. you know, giving them the ability to like really explore what they love, what they yearn to do, right? Like, so I look at my stepson, he has this, I mean, amazing ability. He's extremely intelligent. He's in AP classes, but he loves music and like the arts. That's his thing. And he's like, you know, I want to go to school for this, but I also see my husband saying, no, I don't want you to pursue a career in that, like in that route. Like, I want you to like pursue something. He's a pilot. So he's like, you know, I want you to maybe become an engineer. Or he's like, you know, you're really good in math. But the young person doesn't want that, right? Like, and he wants to, he realizes, hey, I want to go to school and I'm going to do this. So now he's willing to like actually make a compromise and go to a school that offers both, right? Like, but what I'm saying overall is that we need to be able to understand what are the needs of our children.
Well, I think that that's why important where we go from STEAM to STEM. So the A in STEM is for arts.
Correct.
And, you know, STEAM, technology, engineering, mathematics is great. But when you have consumer-driven products and services as a manufacturer in the STEM field, you have to have the aesthetic, softer side to it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, talent and passion such as arts makes a product look aesthetically compelling to a consumer to purchase.
Wait, you know, so if I got to tell you this. Look, D'Addario. They are the largest manufacturer of guitar strings,
yes.
And they're here on Long Island.
Yes.
So here's
yes.
You got. You got a.
And they're looking for engineers.
Wait, yeah. No, but there's a sound engineer. Yeah. So there's this guy there. I got a good video for you. He's a sound engineer. He plays music. Mm-hmm. His job is to design, to test the strings to make sure they have the right sound. He liked video games and was into coding. So he developed the software. He works with the machine shop to create the machine that tests the strings. And he has to play music in order to be able to effectively test it and design the right machinery, right? So you could do both those things, and that's on Long Island.
And yes. The most important thing is that nowadays having, you know, we call it the gig economy, the gig career, where the kid, well, I don't want to say kids, that these emerging workforce, they're going out there and they're finding what their passion is and how are they going to make money off of it. You know, they want to make money. They want to have a roof over their head and food on their plate and they want to travel and they want to do all these different things. So they're creating their own opportunities. And apprenticeships allows for that to happen just as well.
So one of the things that our company did was with our foundation, we decided to start a junior advisory board about a year and a half ago. And I would say it's all millennials. Yep. It is part of, I think, the hardest working unit within our foundation. And it is just the most amazing thing because what happens with these students is that we are giving them mentorship. I can't tell you how many of them have actually pivoted into different industries that they really, really wanted to work into. They'll come to us and they're just like, oh, yeah, well, I want to get involved. And then we're like, okay, let's go out there and experience it. Let's go to networking events, talk to people that are in the industry, you know, have lunch with them, speak with them. And it really just gives them exactly what it is. And first of all, it gives them this amazing, amazing feeling of accomplishment.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
And they feel like, oh, my God, I'm on a board.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I have to tell like the whole world. And that like immediately goes on their LinkedIn profile. And so which is great because you want them to feel, you know, very proud about something. But it's also I don't think it's a surprise that every single student that has served on our advisory board has received some type of scholarship out of a school like Suffolk County Community College, Nassau Community College, awesome. Chancellor's Awards, all these different things. And it's because we give them real experience and we give them the responsibility of holding on to something and having to really run with it.
You know what's interesting? Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no problem. Jay, if you remember, probably a couple of years ago, we had a workforce readiness about Suffolk Community College on the show. And one of the things that we had discussed is that Suffolk Community College offers manufacturing readiness courses, and some of these courses are free. You're not even paying in tuition because they're federally funded through the H-1B visa fees that are collected. And it's part of a initiative on a federal level where those fees that are collected are reinvested into local regions and economies to help cultivate talent and skills where there's a gap skill in doing. So there's a lot of resources that are out there, and we just have to keep educating, educating, educating. I know I keep saying it, but it's so important to do that. And Rosalie works very closely with John Lombardo at Suffolk Community College, you know, with the manufacturing courses, and she helps partner the college with manufacturing companies. I've done that also, you know, and it really is a terrific program where the kids are hands-on. They're learning the trade. They're learning how to rivet and use CNC machines and all these different skills that are in demand today, right now, that there are companies here that are interviewing for these positions, and they're paying very well for it. They're offering benefits, and they're offering stability, and they're not for, you know, fly-by-night companies. They're for premier companies here on Long Island.
With career pathways.
Absolutely.
And you know, when you talk about that, and two things about what you said, Krupa. So one thing, engineers. So a lot of people are interested in engineering jobs. What the engineering managers and senior staff are saying is that that people know how to do the engineering design on a computer, but they haven't worked on a machine. Mm-hmm. So that they're failing. They come out of college, top degree, top performer in the class, but when they come on the jobs, since they've never made the products themselves, they're struggling. Yeah. So again, if our goal as parents and educators is to help them succeed, we have to get them some experience. And I think the other thing is talking about exploring different sectors with an open mind. So manufacturing is one of those. One of the highest paying jobs in Long Island outside of engineering in manufacturing is technology and IT. So if you're into technology and IT, it's in healthcare as well. But there are systems inside of manufacturing that are being designed that they need IT for, that they need coding, that they need technology. ULC Robotics builds drones and robots that are used by National Grid and PSE&G to fly over the power lines or fly into or through the gas lines. Those require three things: someone who can code and develop technology in terms of the software, someone who can build the hardware, the robot, and a pilot. Mm-hmm. An actual licensed pilot has to fly those drones. And that's all being done on Long Island.
Done on Long Island.
And that's utility sector.
Utility sector.
And manufacturing sector and technology. So that's the last thing I would say is it's no longer you have one job and study one thing. You need multiple skills. Every job has technology.
And I got to say that I would be remiss to say that on Long Island, not to have the hotel industry and hospitality industry, which is so emerging and it's huge. And actually, one of our trustees, Dorothy Roberts, she just put in an internship apprenticeship program regarding hospitality within Sachem schools,
for high school students.
All right, ladies, good job. I tell you, very informative segment here. We'll have to do it again. It was an area I wanted to touch upon, and that was before the last break, you know, really touching the student loan process, the effects it has on kids and families from a mental standpoint, and that certainly plays a role going forward. I'll have to bring you back. Wonderful hour, though. Rosalie Drago, Maria Fry, Evelyn Ortiz, and our own Krupa Laura Sella. Ladies, great stuff. Women's Round Table.
Thank you,
cannot thank you, all enough, really.
Thank you, and thank you to the listeners.
Extremely important stuff, and we'll have you back for a future Women's Round Table. I want to thank all.